One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, a Carlton E. Morse creation. One Man's Family, now in its 27th year, is dedicated to the mothers and fathers of a younger generation and to their bewildering offspring. Chapter 25, Book 132 of the Barber Family Saga. Today, Consider Martin sings a song at midnight. A few minutes before midnight, an airport limousine rolls past the public gates to Seacliff, and moments later, in her second-floor bedroom adjoining the nursery at Jones' house, Deflin, Jones' maid, has a moment of terror as she hears a key fumbling in the front lock and then the doorbell. Zeflin plunges into robe and slippers and hurries downstairs, expecting to greet Jones' house guest, the unpredictable Consider Martin.
Just a minute, sir. I kept it bolted on account of Halloween. Is it you, Mr. Martin?
Hello, Zeflin.
For goodness sake, where did you come from?
Albuquerque was my last stop.
But for goodness sake, never I had a surprise.
Oh, wait a minute. My bags are on the porch.
Oh, pardon me. Yes, ma'am. I'll get them.
I have a phone call to make. How are the children?
I take the bags up. The kids are just fine, ma'am. Except for one visit from their daddy, everything's been nice as can be.
I hear Cousin Consider is out all night, most every night, and sleeps days.
Yes?
Oh, Uncle Paul, I saw your light on. Were you reading?
Well, Jones, where are you?
Home. I chartered a plane from Taos to Albuquerque and caught an airliner. I saw your light, so I figured maybe you hadn't gone to bed.
Well, what's the matter, honey?
Oh, Ross phoned me at Taos, and... Oh, I'd better come over there, unless it's too late.
No, stay there. I'm finishing a letter. I'll be over in 10 minutes.
Oh, good. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Well, if he was trying to scare me, he certainly succeeded.
We'll talk about it.
Oh, thanks.
Yes, slippers, Miss Farnsworth.
Oh, thank you, Zeflin.
You want to slip your dress off and put on this robe?
Oh, well, I'd like that very much. I'd forgotten about the service here.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Martin and Miss Greta went Norwegian folks dancing, but they said they wouldn't be too late. I had the door bolted, but I was kind of halfway asleep listening for them. They were sirens tonight.
It's the season for sirens.
It sure is. Halloween time. Jolly and Tina went trick-or-treating over to the folks' house and had a fine time.
Did you say their father came here?
Yes, ma'am. Got back from Arkansas Wednesday or so.
I see. Did you tell him where I was?
Not me. I fogged that up good, Miss Farnsworth. I double-talked it so he wouldn't find out you were away with Dr. Borden.
Somebody told him, though, and he put the worst possible interpretation on it. What did you tell him?
I said it was a museum expedition with a bunch of what Miss Penny calls tortoise shells out in the hot desert digging in the sand. That's the part that fogged up best of all. I don't think I ever talked longer to anybody and told them less.
Well, somebody has told him that the children adore Ray Borden.
Yes, one thing I sort of worried about a little bit. Johnny looked at him a long time, not saying hello, Daddy, just looking. And Mr. Farnsworth says, "Why, son," he says, "don't you know me?" And finally Johnny says, "You my daddy. Would you like a highball like Dr. Borden?"
Oh, no.
Yes, ma'am. And then Johnny sort of warmed up and gave his daddy a big hug. They both did. And he squatted down and hugged them and had tears in his eyes. I don't know if it's acting or not. Real glistening tears. And long about then, Johnny says, "Would you like a bourbon highball," he says, "or scotch?"
Oh, dear.
Yes, I said, "Dr. Ray has scotch on rocks, one drink before dinner, and is a college professor." But Mr. Farnsworth said, "You're excused, Zeflin." So I don't know what the kids said after that. Nothing for me to do but go.
Was Miss Emmons with her?
Who?
Oh, you remember Elizabeth Emmons? Tall, handsome woman. You know, the one he's going to marry.
Oh, no, ma'am. I didn't see her.
Did he mention her at all?
No, ma'am. He wanted to know about Johnny's school, if it's progressive. He's deaf on progressive schools. I couldn't tell him.
Well, he talked to me about that on the phone. I think it's just an excuse to... Oh, well, that'll be Uncle Paul.
Oh, yes, ma'am. I let him in.
Oh, golly. Oh, darn, 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 darn.
And a good evening to you, my lovely.
Why, Mr. Martin, what's this? Why, thank you.
A Norwegian corsage which tumbled from the giant bosom of a veritable lady Viking with whom I was stomping out a number called Come to Texas. Joe!
Zeflin, for goodness sake, close the front door.
Yes, ma'am, we got neighbors.
Oh, what's the trouble? What's happened to the spirit of the dance around here? Whoop! Oh,
do you feel all right?
What a question on an international holiday. After tromping with giant Nordic Wagnerian bosomy women who seem to stand closer to you than you do to them.
Where's Greta?
Greta? Oh, Greta stayed to dance with a Norwegian airline captain whom she knew.
Catch him, Zeppelin.
I got him. Oh, golly. One more inch and he sure would have whacked his head.
We'll return in just a moment to One Man's Family. Do you know what is called the first American Constitution to create a government in the United States? It was called the Fundamental Orders and was written in Connecticut in 1639. A great deal of our election procedures today are based on the Fundamental Orders. For example, they stated that when a nation of people are joined together in peace and unity, they should have a decent and orderly government to handle their problems. The Fundamental Orders also established a method for voting. They directed that the people of each town would meet together at a set time and place to elect what they called deputies. These deputies attended general assemblies and voted on all laws and orders which would be for the public good, just like our representatives and senators do today. Yes, these early settlers in Connecticut added a most important page to your political history. It's exactly 7 minutes later. Consider Martin in fresh white pajamas, smiling blissfully in untroubled sleep, is lying against a snowy pillow, his white hair neatly brushed from his shining forehead.
Miss Farnsworth, I bet he don't weigh 80 pounds, dripping wet.
Oh, it's a mystery how he keeps alive.
He's waking up. Listen, there's the doorbell.
Oh, that's Uncle Paul. Will you bring him up? We'll talk in my bedroom.
Yes, ma'am. Look, his eyes are wide open.
Oh, I'll look after him. Oh, try not to wake the children.
Yes, ma'am. The door is closed.
Oh, God, I saw his hard heart started and carried in a car.
You all right?
Oh, 3 a.m. I once said to Pinky, I said, 3 a.m. is the loveliest hour of the 24. All the people who create the turmoil are having their nightmares, and a lovely world belongs to you and me.
Cousin, consider.
Whom have we here? Joan, are we in New Mexico?
I came home, Cece.
Oh, how restful. I'm home myself.
My ex-husband was here the other day, I understand. Did you see him?
To satiety. He's a pedagogue of the most frigid sort. I invited him to have a brandy with me out of old New England hospitality, which is less insistent than southern hospitality, but generally it's all the same. And he threw himself up heartily.
Here he is, Miss Farnsworth.
Oh, Uncle Paul.
Well, well.
Oh, he's been to a Norwegian square dance, and he's absolutely bushed.
Don't he look beautiful and innocent when he's sleeping?
Brandy?
I don't know what he's been drinking. Norwegian schnapps, maybe, whatever they are.
I'll open the windows good and wide. It scares you when he's asleep. He looks older than 83. He looks 93 sometimes.
Leave the door ajar, Zeppelin, so we can hear him.
Yes, ma'am.
Come on down the hall to my room, Uncle Paul. I'm sorry to bother you at this time of night.
You're surprising me a little, honey. Why'd you come back?
Yeah, go on in.
Don't tell me you hauled down the flag.
Well, I felt I had to get home, that's all. Ross phoned me. I could hear him saying all sorts of things in court, that I'd gone off and left the children with Zeppelin and an 80-year-old playboy who wanders in and out in questionable condition. And then he implied that my trip was improper. And he said while Johnny showed a precocious vocabulary in anthropology, he found that he couldn't even spell fish. And then he said that...
Go on, honey.
Well, he said, after all, he was a schoolteacher of the old-fashioned sort who believed in fundamentals. And since his children were bright and willing to learn, he felt they should go to some proper school where they'd learn something. And that he was dreadfully unhappy about the whole situation here in California. And he said he was going to have a talk with the judge about it.
Miss Farnsworth! Mr. Barber!
Yes, Zeppelin?
You better come up here. He's dressing. He says he's going back to that Norwegian square dance.
Stay here, Joan. I'll handle it. Coming, Zeppelin.
More of the barbers in just a moment.
This might sound a little confusing at first, but if you've heard of a library having been woven well, you might credit the United States Officers' Wives Club, formerly at Wheelis Air Base, for inventing the idea. The women got interested in a school for some 300 homeless boys under the jurisdiction of the Libyan government. The school had native teachers, but had precious little in the way of essential educational aids. The fact they didn't have a library started the wheels of progress in motion. The Officers' Wives Club could easily have raised a fund for books, but members decided this wasn't the sensible thing to do under the circumstances. The boys were just learning to read and write, and it would take a while before they could use a library and realize its value. So instead of books, the club bought the school a loom and a supply of yarn. The plan called for the boys to learn how to weave barakan, the soft cloth used by native women to make dresses, and a popular fabric with Westerners who managed to visit Libya. Proceeds from initial sales of the material were invested in more yarn until a sizable stock existed. Then the school diverted the profits for books. Not only did the boys help earn their own library, but they also got vocational training in weaving. One of the wives of the club was asked how they happened to hit on this particular idea. She replied, "It just evolved." Elaborating a bit, she explained that the members of the club thought it was a good step toward getting Libya's future citizens to recognize the fact that Americans wished them well, and that they were willing to do what they could to help their immediate needs. Plainly, she added, "We can do with more knowing in North Africa these days. Yes, these homeless boys of Libya can hold their heads up and be proud they had the chance to earn their own library and keep it growing with a loom and a supply of yarn. These United States officers' wives gave us all a thought to remember. We are Americans. As we go, so goes America."
20 minutes later, Joan tiptoes into Considine's room where Paul sits beside the bed in the semi-darkness.
Uncle Paul?
Yes? I guess he's all right now. I wanted to make sure.
Oh, dear, isn't he skinny, though? Oh, let's go back to my room. Nothing in the world keeps him alive but a happy spirit.
Poor spirits.
Oh, he doesn't drink so much, really. He's an old, old man. No telling how old. Older than he admits, I'm sure of that.
Tell you what I think we better do. I'll come over and get him in the morning. We'll move him in with me.
Well, why?
Well, for one thing, I'd enjoy it, and for another, you have enough to do.
And then Ross couldn't say the children were living with a singing old reprobate from Lockland, Maine?
It's true, he couldn't, could he?
Oh, Uncle Paul, I've been sitting at home for 2 whole years. 2 for 6. And now I take one little vacation, and it's going to sound awful in court if I had to explain where I was and what I did.
Self-pity, huh?
Is it?
No time for that, honey. Let's sit down and work this out.
One Man's Family, which comes to you Monday through Friday, is written by Harlan Ware and directed by Carlton E. Morse, and features J. Anthony Smythe, Bernice Berwin, Paige Gilman, Russell Thorson, and Mary Adams. In Chapter 26, Book 131, End of a Love Story. One Man's Family, winner of 47 national awards, now in its 27th year, is a Carlton E. Morse production and comes to you from California.
One Man's Family has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.